See on the podium, and we have one facing us. The podium moves up and down with switches, I believe, although I myself have never operated it, I must say. You can assume that we have read the briefs, so we are familiar with the facts, and at least one of us has looked at the record, so you might want to focus your argument directly on the legal issues. The arguments are recorded, so please stay close to the microphone, so we'll have a good recording of your comments, and they're also put on the internet, so remember to be careful what you say. And stay close to that microphone so you are recorded. And if you're ready to begin, please step up, counsel, state your name and your attorney registration number.
Good afternoon, Your Honor. My name is Scott Jerome, and my registration number is 7840, and I represent the appellant, Metal Management. Metal Management is in the business of purchasing and recycling metal products. Any restriction on what Metal Management can purchase and what they can do with what they purchase impacts their ability to conduct a competitive business. In July 2006, a new law was enacted called Transfer for Recycling, 42-4-2202. It restricted Metal Management's business because they are now prohibited by law from purchasing a motor vehicle unless the transferor has title, bill of sale, and then they have to hold it for 7 days. Every day at work, Metal Management has to decide, can we purchase things that look like this? And for the record, I'm pointing to exhibit 32. This appears in the appellate record at CD-767. Now, the record in this case would show that two law enforcement officers involved in the case, Detective Ortiz from the State Patrol and Officer Lambert from the Sheriff's Department in Colorado Springs, both believe that this, Exhibit 32, is a motor vehicle subject to the requirements of 42-4-2202. Officer Campbell, who is the legislative liaison for the State Patrol and actually testified concerning the adoption of this new law in the spring of 2006, testified in this case that what you see in Exhibit 32 is not a motor vehicle. Now, the issue comes up with many customers who don't hold title. You purchase a ranch in the southeast part of the state, there's a bunch of scrap on it, you have something like this, you want to get rid of it. Can you get rid of it? The issue would appear to turn on whether Exhibit 32 is a motor vehicle. If it's a motor vehicle, then you have to turn away the customer if they don't have a title.
Excuse me, Mr. Jordan. They can hold this piece of metal or motor vehicle for 7 days and then dispose of it, correct? Whether or not it has a title.
No, they cannot take it in. They can't they can't purchase it if the transferor doesn't have a title.
That's not how I read part B of the statute. It says that they can comply with section 2, which says they have to hold it during the 7 day period, and during the 7 day period they have to go through this process of submitting the VIN, I suppose. But it doesn't say they can't take it in, does it?
Your Honor, it says in section 1B that no person shall purchase or otherwise receive a motor vehicle unless the transferor is the owner on the certificate of title under section 1A.
So then C says, or the receiver or purchaser, which I take it is your client, complies with subsection 2. And then subsection 2 has the 7 day holding period and some other provisions.
And my interpretation of this statute, which was shared by the judges below as well as by Kelly in your briefs, is that the "or" modifies Section B concerning the bill of sale. It did not remove the certificate of title requirements.
Okay, thank you.
And so, if you're metal management, you cannot take, you must turn away the customer if this is a motor vehicle and they don't have title. Now, when this bill went into law, metal management communicated at great length with law enforcement. This was not a case where they immediately refused to comply or saw or moved to have it determined unconstitutional. They tried to comply. In the emails in the record, beginning at page CD 50 through 71, there are many references to, I am losing a ton of business, we want to comply. What they asked for is basically, isn't there a statutory definition of motor vehicle we can rely on in making the decision as to whether or not we can take this item, number 32, from someone without a title? That's what they were asking.
And Mr. Jerdum, let me interrupt you if I might and ask you a question. Based upon your argument in your briefs that motor vehicles should be defined as it is in the statute, is it your position that if I brought in a car that was a complete car except that it was missing one tire, would not count as a motor vehicle?
Well, Your Honor, I think that would depend on the individual case. What we did in this case was seek a declaratory judgment to get some clarification of the law that was creating uncertainty in terms of our ability to do business. It was our opinion that by getting a declaratory judgment saying that the requirements of 42.4.2202 apply only to transactions involving motor vehicles as defined in 42.1.102.58, that we would get some clarity. I'm not saying it would be perfect. I don't know the answer to each individual case if it didn't have an engine, if it didn't have a transmission, if it didn't have one tire or two tires. But there's a procedure in our law for businesses to utilize that's time-tested, of seeking a declaratory judgment to get some certainty, beginning with Board of Optometric Examiners versus Dixon when they said optometrists couldn't work in the eyeglass store.
Right. No, I understand your motivation in trying to seek declaratory relief. But what I'm trying to understand is the precise type of declaratory relief that you would like to obtain, because your argument based upon the statutory definition is that a motor vehicle is something that's self-propelled. And that's why I asked you, if you had a car that only had three tires, would it constitute a motor vehicle in your view?
And my answer again, and if you judge Ogburn's opinion, the initial opinion in February of 2009, he recognized the issue. And he said very specifically that we were asking the court for an order saying we could accept metal scrap for recycling without a title and without regard for the 7-day hold unless the scrap is a motor vehicle defined by 42.1.102.58. That was the order we were asking for. We believe that that order would have been helpful to our ability to do business, that law enforcement would have taken a different position, for example, in this instance, in Exhibit 32. It may not have taken a different position in a situation with a flat tire. But I don't believe that's my client's fault or problem. They didn't write the law. The legislature wrote the law, and it is an attempt to compromise between the needs of law enforcement and the needs of business. And we have a statute that says if something is a motor vehicle, you can't take it in without a title. And then we have a definition of what a motor vehicle is. And after asking in good faith law enforcement what they thought and whether there was a definition we could rely on, we sought a declaratory judgment saying that motor vehicle means motor vehicle under 42.1.102.58.
Didn't Judge Schwartz agree with you? I read his order as agreeing with you. That's the definition you want, and that's the definition he says applies. You don't think the other definition applies, do you?
If No, I think, I don't think that Judge Schwartz agreed with me because he granted the defendant's motion for summary judgment and threw us out of court. So if Judge Schwartz had agreed with us, then we wouldn't be here in relation to this first issue. With the court's permission, I do need to move on to the second issue, if that's given the time I have. What the second issue in the case concerns is the Daily Record Statute, 425105. This is a statute that says in Section 1B5 that if you take in a motor vehicle, then you're required to record the engine number, VIN number, or some other identifying number. That's what it says in Section 1B5. The statute also deals with accessories, parts of all kinds. It does not require any other number be recorded other than if you take in a complete motor vehicle. So my client's practice has been to weigh the vehicle. What happens, if you look at CD 777 and through 79, people come in with a pickup truck full of dirty, oily motor vehicle parts. And what at least our Detective Ortiz testified to was, in his opinion, my client has to hire someone to get down in the bed of the pickup with a toothbrush or something and clean off that part and figure out what that number is and write it down and put it in the Daily Record.
In a case like your exhibit, is there still a VIN number and where is it? Or isn't there a VIN number on the part?
Some parts have a VIN number, some parts don't have a VIN number. That's part of the problem. But it would be, according to law enforcement's position, in the appellee's brief, they say the same thing, that what we do is insufficient. What we do is we bring a truck in, we put it on a scale, we video it, we take a picture of the license plate, we get the ID of the driver, and we take a picture of the stuff in the bed. That is what we do to comply with 425105. The appellee says that that is insufficient and does not fulfill the statutory requirements of 425105. They say that at page 17 in the brief. So the appellee is telling us that we're breaking the law. They represent law enforcement in the state. The three officers in this case, Ortiz, AC, and Lambert, all said that the practice that we use to comply with 425105 violates the law. And that creates an issue.
Mr. Jordan, it's not your position that if the part has a serial number, or is it your position that if the part has a serial number, your client's not obligated to write it down? If it's greasy, dirty, or hard to find?
Correct.
That's an unreasonable requirement that the legislature has put on you.
It's not an unreasonable requirement. There is no such requirement. There's no requirement in the statute anywhere that says they have to write it down.
Mr. Jordan, Judge Schwartz ruled against you on this issue on the basis that there was no threatened prosecution.
Yes.
What specifically in the record would support your contrary view?
Well, all three law enforcement officers that have jurisdiction at this facility all testified that what my clients do is a violation of the law and that they believe it does not comply with 425105. And I believe that when appellee concedes in their brief that what we do to comply with the law is insufficient and does not fulfill the statutory requirements, we have law enforcement telling us we're breaking the law. So that implies to me that I have a reasonable concern that they're going to come in and charge me with a crime because they're telling me I'm violating the law. That's normally, in my experience, enough to believe that we have a serious risk of prosecution. In the Dixon case, the optometrists hadn't been prosecuted. There's a whole series of cases where people have been prosecuted. A good example is Jam Action versus the State Patrol, where the tow truck driver sued because they were told they weren't allowed to keep property that was not part of the vehicle, personal property. and they sued. So there's been many cases where no one had been prosecuted, many cases where no one had yet been prosecuted.
So I gather your point, your position is that it would be a distinction without a difference for them to, for the police to say you're violating the law on, and without anything more, as opposed to saying you're violating the law and we're going to issue a citation against you.
Well, once this case began, they stopped coming to Metal Management and doing anything, and I believe it's because of the fact of the lawsuit. My opinion is that if we don't prevail in the lawsuit, that's right. They're going to come in and shut down that process.
Let me ask you a question, Mr. Foyokoi. With respect to the other statute, apparently your client's employee was cited and prosecuted for violation of law, right?
Yes.
Did he raise as a defense the constitutional arguments you're making in this case?
The case was dismissed.
How so?
It was dismissed through plea negotiations. I mean, what eventually happened, I represented him. What happened was we spoke with the county court judge, and the district attorney did not want to litigate the arguments that we're litigating here today.
So you raised these constitutional defenses in the criminal case, but they were never resolved.
Well, I want to be completely accurate. We discussed with the district attorney that if we went forward on the criminal case, we would be arguing the exact same thing that was before the district court on a declaratory judgment action, and asked the district attorney if he wanted to do that or if he would prefer to continue the case until the resolution of this case. He agreed to continue the case. So it was never, there were no pleadings. I never filed a pleading because I'm an officer of the court. I don't want to misrepresent this. I never filed a pleading in county court saying the statute, motion to dismiss statute, unconstitutional. Never got that far.
But guess what I'm getting is, why isn't that a preferred forum to get this litigated? Then you have hard facts in front of you. You have a specific vehicle. You have specific allegations. Isn't that a better forum to litigate these issues?
It might be more profitable for myself as a criminal defense attorney, because in theory I would need to go back day in and day out every time they got charged with a new vehicle to represent them. My opinion is that the declaratory judgment action takes care of the problem in theory once and for all. Litigating each piece of metal that comes in and whether or not it meets the definition of a motor vehicle does not solve the problem.
And the declaration you would ask for is to what effect?
The declaration that I would ask for is exactly as referenced by Judge Ogborn in his February 9th order. He says plaintiff seeks a declaratory judgment declaring that the requirements of 42.4.2202, transfer for recycling, apply only to transactions involving motor vehicles as defined by CRS 42.1.102.58. Essentially, an order that we can accept scrap metal for recycling without a title from a customer unless the scrap metal is a motor vehicle as defined in 42.1.102.58.
Yes, sir.
Let me ask you just one quick question.
Yes.
On the criminal case,
yes.
At one point you said it was dismissed. That was the first time
yes.
your issue was raised. And then when you discussed what happened in that case, you said that the prosecutor said, well, we'll hold it in abeyance. So was it dismissed or is it still live?
No, it was dismissed. What eventually happened is it was held in abeyance for so long that we got to a point where I think everybody felt we had.
Okay, so it is dismissed.
It is dismissed. The bottom line is that there is no criminal case pending against Mr. Oliver or Metal Management.
Okay.
May it please the court. My name is Will Bain, bar number 27558. I am an assistant city attorney for the city of Colorado Springs, and I am speaking today on behalf of all of the government defendants. The government respectfully requests that this court affirm the grant of summary judgment by the trial court below for three reasons. First, the government has enforced and has sought to enforce the provisions of 42.4.2201 at SEEK in a manner fully consistent with legislative intent. Two, the definition of motor vehicle is not vague in either an applied analysis or a facial unconstitutionality analysis.
Mr. Jordan just told us that he has no problem with the statute. I'm paraphrasing what he says, provided that the definition of motor vehicle as used in 42.422.01 at SEC is a definition that appears in subparagraph 58 of that. Does your clients take issue with that?
We do not take issue with that.
Okay, so there's no dispute over that. That's the definition that ought to be applied.
That's correct.
Okay.
Well, Mr. Bain, it sounds like there is a dispute, obviously, otherwise we wouldn't be here. But it sounds like Mr. Jordan's position is that a motor vehicle has to be something that strictly meets the statutory definition, and therefore, to simplify, is a self-propelled vehicle. Whereas I gather from your brief that something that once was operable as a motor vehicle is still considered a motor vehicle in your view. Is that a fair statement?
That is exactly the government's position.
So then what is, in your view then, it doesn't matter if, to use the hypothetical I used before, if I brought in a car and one tire was missing, you would still say it's a motor vehicle?
Yes.
And if a fender were missing, you would still say it was a motor vehicle?
Yes.
And if it were what's in that picture, you would still say it's a motor vehicle?
Yes.
And but if I just brought in a fender, you would presumably say, and I am inferring this based upon your briefs, that just the fender itself would not be a motor vehicle?
That is correct.
So what is the test then that you're espousing to determine how metal management or how the police would determine what is, in fact, a motor vehicle?
The test we propose is if you look at the object, and for example, Exhibit 32 that plaintiff's counsel brought today, and a person of ordinary intelligence can identify that as something that at one point was self-propelled and that traveled the public highways carrying people or property, that's a motor vehicle. So in looking at the auto body here, which is essentially the core of a motor vehicle, even a 10-year-old would identify that as, oh, that's a car. If, with Your Honor's suggestion, one looks at just a door or the rearview mirror or a tire, nobody's going to say of that item, oh, that's an old car. They'll recognize that readily as simply a car part. So we boil down, at least to a core, would be the auto body, stripped of everything. If all you have is the auto body, such as this picture here, that would be a motor vehicle.
In your example, do you think that it would be unanimous that people who would look at that exhibit would say that's an automobile? Using the definition in the statute, you know, self-propelled and all that, you being informed that's the statute, and then you say, okay, look at that exhibit. Do you think it's unanimous or majority or?
I think it would be unanimous. What I would envision though is instead of the person taking a look at this particular picture, the person would have the opportunity of seeing this particular object in three dimension. So if this object were placed on the ground and brought in for recycling, the person of ordinary intelligence would see this object and say, oh yeah, that's obviously an old car.
And applying the statute, self-propelled, et cetera, and so on, somebody is informed, now this is the definition of an automobile, and you use the statutory definition, and you say, here it is. You tell me, is this an automobile? You think it's unanimous that people would say that?
I think if you take just the definition in isolation and apply it to this, perhaps there would be some hesitation. But when you apply that provision in the context of 42.422.02, which is recycling old motor vehicles, coupling those two together, the person of ordinary intelligence is going to recognize, oh yeah, that's the kind of motor vehicle that this statute applies to. I think it's important to read that definition in context.
Your position that they cannot take this car in at all, or that they have to hold it for 7 days? I'm not sure I'm understanding that's how the statute reads.
Your Honor, in 2006, when the 2200 series was enacted, the requirement for metal recyclers was that they get any motor vehicle, it had to have title, and it had to have a bill of sale, and they had to hold it for 7 days. The very next year is when the legislature changed the statute and made it, the metal recycler had to do one of three things. They either had to get title, or they had to get a bill of sale. But if the person bringing it in didn't have either of those things, all the metal recycler had to do was hold it for 7 days and run the VIN number through the computer system.
Can take it in, they just have to hold it for 7 days.
That's correct.
All right. And then if there's no VIN number, that's a different issue.
That would be a different issue, but I think the metal recycler who takes in the motor vehicle, such as this, and there's no VIN number anywhere on it, that essentially means that car has been tampered with in a criminal way, because if you take the VIN number off, that's a crime, and they ought to not be dealing with that metal to begin with.
So the part, wherever it is, that has the VIN number is still part of that car, part of that whatever it is.
Yes, it should be, unless it's been tampered with.
Right.
The motor vehicle dealer stamped the VIN in numerous places so that there's always a place to find the VIN number. As to the vagueness challenge as applied, it's important to remember that this exhibit here is not part of the as applied challenge. The as applied challenge relates to what Tim Oliver, the agent for Metal Management, was charged with. What he was charged with was taking in a yellow and white van.
Oh, not Exhibit 32.
Yes, not Exhibit 32. I apologize.
Oh, where does that appear in the record, the picture of the yellow and white van? I thought this was perhaps what they're referring to.
The yellow and white van is at CD page 392.
Thank you.
And if a person of ordinary intelligence looks at that picture, even though it may not have wheels, it may not have doors, the person of ordinary intelligence is easily going to be able to identify that as, well, that's just an old car. And even though it was brought in on a flatbed truck, and it therefore is not self-propelled at that moment, it was certainly something that was self-propelled at some time in the past. In discerning the legislative intent, and this goes back to just Judge Taubman's question, to interpret self-propelled to mean that the vehicle has to come in on all four wheels and the car running would lead to an absurd result. The legislature surely would have contemplated the scenario, had they adopted that interpretation or meant that interpretation, of the thief stealing the Cadillac Escalade, driving it down to the doors of the recycling center, and then either taking a wheel off or pulling out the spark plugs and pushing it on into the lot. A statute that would be that easy to thwart would not have been a statute worth passing by the legislature. So they clearly...
But a statute could have been made more clear that the definition referred to something that was once a self-propelled vehicle. I mean, that's another solution to the problem.
They could have done that. One thing I would point out, Your Honor, is that when this motor vehicle definition was adopted in 2006, it was simply adopted as the definition from 42.1.102, and was applicable to more than 100 statutes already in Title 42. So I think what the legislature did was say, well, we've already got a definition for motor vehicle. It applies to more than 100 other statutes between 42.1 and Articles 1 through 4. And instead of formulating a new definition, I think the intent was the ordinary citizen will be able to figure out that in this context, we don't just mean the car comes driving in, but means any car that has ever driven the roads.
You redirect it to the other statute, Mr. Bain. I understand it's your position that they must record a serial number or some kind of identification number from any motor vehicle part that's brought in and not just the vehicle itself? Is there a dispute between the parties on that point?
There is not a dispute. Where there may be some misunderstanding is that what the government requires is, to the extent there is an identification number on a part, it needs to be recorded.
No matter how greasy or dirty it is, they've got to look for it.
That's correct.
Okay. But if there is no part, no number, you obviously don't have to record it.
That's correct.
With all due respect, Mr. Bain, it does sound to me like there is a dispute, because Mr. Jerdum just told us that in his view the statute 42.5.105 does not require at all the recording of an identification number for just offenders, for example?
The statute was written in a general manner and requires the recycler to write a description of the item being taken out in a manner readily identifiable by peace officer. What in the government's position is, what better way to make something, describe something as readily identifiable than writing down the identity?
Well, that may be so, but can you point us to any language in 425105 that requires that?
In Roman numeral 5, there's a requirement that the VIN number be written down for a motor vehicle brought.
Right, but my question was for a part, like offender.
No,
so there's no. So you would agree then, I gather, with Mr. Jerdum's position that there is no statutory requirement for writing down any kind of ID number for just a part?
Not an explicit requirement, no.
Okay. Now, then my next question then is what your view is with regard to Judge Schwartz's rationale for dismissing Mr. Jerdum's challenge to the daily record statute on the basis that there's been no threat of prosecution. And your brief, and he said the police officers' testimony or affidavits were to the effect that this is a violation of the law if you don't write down the ID number. So if that's all true, then how is it so that employees of metal management or metal management itself would not be subject to threat of arrest or prosecution?
I don't think that the law enforcement's statement in response to questioning as to whether they consider something criminal or not in the venue of a deposition to which they've been subpoenaed qualifies as a legitimate threat that creates an actual case or controversy.
So is it your view then that metal management can continue to use its current procedure, which I guess involves taking a photograph of parts that are brought in and recording the license plate of the and the other information, that's okay, and even if they don't write down the ID number, and that they would not be subject to arrest or prosecution?
No, it is our position they are still required to write down the serial number for parts.
But if what happens if that's your position and they don't do that, then the question is, are they subject to arrest and prosecution?
They would be if there were a unit with the Colorado Springs Police Department that did this work anymore.
Okay, well, and does that not undercut Judge Schwartz's rationale for deciding this issue in your favor?
No, Your Honor. I think when lawyers are saying in court, as they did in front of Judge Schwartz, that here's our interpretation of what the requirements are, while we're giving our view of what the law is, that still does not rise to the level of a threat of prosecution.
But didn't you just tell us 1 minute ago that there would be a threat of prosecution if employees of metal management don't write down the ID number of a part that's brought in?
Well, there's only a threat to the extent it is a violation of criminal law. It is not a threat to the extent there's nobody at Colorado Springs Police Department who enforces this law anymore. So though somebody may be committing a crime, the fact that there is no possibility of enforcement because there is nobody who enforces that law makes this question not an actual case or controversy that is ripe for this court's review.
Tomorrow, somebody may decide to enforce the law. I mean, what sort of security does that give the plaintiffs in this case?
I think the possibility of prosecution under this court's precedent and Supreme Court precedent does not rise to the level of a legitimate threat of prosecution.
So then the question I have for you, and I see we're just about out of time, is how would, to follow up on Judge Nay's question, how would metal management know if the city of Colorado Springs were to change its policy in the future and decide to enforce the law the way you believe it ought to be enforced?
Well, I think what would happen, and is as clear from the record in this case, is that before Colorado Springs Police Department ticketed Mr. Oliver from metal management, he was given repeated warnings by several agencies. So I think it's a fair inference to draw from this record that in the event CSPD were to begin enforcing that law, there would be adequate notice, as has been given previously, that you're on notice now that this may be enforced at some point. But the mere possibility is not enough to make the case ripe at this point.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Counsel, I think we're out of time, unless Mr. Jordan, I don't think he had any time left, did he? No, I don't think we did.
With all due respect, I was trying to reserve, but I was responding to a question. May I have a minute? Because I couldn't reserve because I was answering. I didn't know what, I don't have a lot of experience here, and I don't know.
Oh, you can have 30 seconds, Mr. Jordan.
30 seconds, that? It is, Your Honor. Your Honor, in relation to the position taken by appellee just now in relation to our first argument, it seems clear that the court erred in not entering a declaratory judgment saying that the requirements of 424.2202 apply only to transactions involving motor vehicles as defined by 421.102.58, because appellee just told you he had no objection to that. And that's exactly what we asked for in our complaint, and it should have been granted instead of dismissed. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. The case is submitted, and counsel are excused, and a written order will enter in due course.